I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome back to Radio Times. After many years of controversy, court challenges, fundraising, neighborhood feuds, and protests, the Barnes Philadelphia will open its doors on May 19th. The prized art collection by Dr. Albert Barnes includes numerous paintings by Renoir, Cezanne, Matisse, Picasso, Rousseau, among others, along with African sculptures, metalwork, and furniture. It was on display in Lower Merion for more than 85 years and will now be viewed in a brand new facility on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway in Philadelphia. While the building and the setting look nothing like the site in Lower Merion, the paintings and the artifacts have been meticulously hung to Barnes' exacting specifications. We invited the two architects and the landscape designer to join us on Radio Times, and let me introduce them to you. Todd Williams and Billy Tsien are the founders and partners of Todd Williams and Billy Tsien Architects, which is based in Manhattan. And Billy Tsien, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
I'm happy to be here.
We're happy to have you here. Todd Williams, thanks for joining us as well.
Thank you as well.
You're welcome. Also with us is Lori Olin, landscape architect, founder, partner of the Philadelphia landscape design firm, the Olin Studio. And Lori Olin, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
It's great to be here, Marty.
Let me turn first to you, Billy Tsien, and I know that you visited the Barnes in Lower Merion a number of times. What was your first impression the first time you went out there?
Well, I think the thing that struck us most was as we entered in Latches Lane and walked through the gateway, we were sort of amazed by the peace of the garden that surrounded the building. And that was a very, very powerful impression. We thought, this is a gallery in a garden. And that's an idea that we kept with us throughout thinking about the design. And I think then the second thing was, we walked in, and like most people, we were flabbergasted by the collection, and then also doubly flabbergasted by the way it was hung.
Quite unusual, to say the least.
Right. So we were amazed and actually overwhelmed, and because we were so used to seeing museums where the masterpieces are really the sort of focal point and everything else kind of recedes. And here, everything had the same amount of attention paid to it. So by the time we finished the first floor, I have to say, we were exhausted.
Wow. Would you agree with that, Todd Williams?
No, absolutely. It was, as Billy says, it was exhilarating and exhausting. We were having tremendous difficulty in sorting the work out. But I also realized shortly after that that we were, even though we had come into this building, we had never really had a chance to look outside. There were only, of the 23 rooms, there was only one room that permitted us to actually see the out of doors and to enjoy the garden in which we were residing. So a lot of the work was impressionist work, and so much of the impressionist work really is painted outside in the natural light, and much of it relates to the garden.
And how much did you want to then obviously preserve the uniqueness of this experience and even the uniqueness of all the work there, but obviously you're taking it out of its habitat where it's been for more than 85 years and putting it into a new building on the parkway?
I think at first we honestly remained confused.
It wasn't clear. Right?
Yeah. What are we doing here? How do we value every single work equally with every other work? And it took a while before we really warmed up to the assignment. We were, of course, excited immediately. We were thrilled and stimulated, but understanding really where to go with it wasn't something we knew. As Billy says, what we did know is that we had an idea that this was a gallery and a garden, and we also believed in our concept that we wanted to create a garden within the gallery. So that principle of relating nature to the experience of the art was something we had from the onset, and that was a kind of first life preserver.
I'm curious, and I'll put this to you, Billy. This is obviously a controversial move in the art world here in the Philadelphia area as well. Have you been criticized for even taking on this project because it, you know, essentially takes this collection out of Lower Merion and brings it into the city?
Yes.
In a word.
But it's interesting. I think that there's a backstory obviously it's a huge backstory, and that's one of the reasons, beyond the sort of magnificence of the collection, why so much attention is being paid to this. But I think more importantly is the front story. You know, where does this go from here? What does it do for the safety of the collection, for the safety of the paintings? What does it do actually to honor Dr. Barnes's intention that this was a collection that was put together for the education of people? And so there is the backstory, and there has been criticism, but I think we look forward, and I think this is a gift to Philadelphia. I think it's a gift to the world.
Let me turn to you, Laurie Olin, because you were taking a setting about 4.5 acres in Lower Merion, about 15 acres in Lower Merion, and dealing with about 4.5 acres on the parkway. As a landscape architect, what was the challenge for you?
Well, there were several, Marty. One is, of course, how can you, in the middle of a great American city, produce the calm and tranquility or even the sense of amplitude that an estate, a mainline estate near Philadelphia would have? The other is that the Barnes was coming to a great urban composition from the City Beautiful movement created by a couple of French designers just after the turn of the century. And the Benjamin Franklin Parkway has its own great strengths. And so we had to figure out how to work within the vision, actually a rather French vision, for this great boulevard on the parkway on the one hand, and then take people through a series of moves through other spaces into a more intimate, calmer place, so that then when they entered the building, they were already in a different mood. So it had to do with scale. It had to do with plants. It had to do with circulation. Mm-hmm.
Do you think of the parkway as the Champs-Élysées, the sort of baby Champs-Élysées in Philadelphia?
It has the same number of vehicle lanes, I suspect, and some of the trees, but needless to say, not the grand shops and the stores and the apartment buildings. But it does have a life that is extremely important to the city of Philadelphia, and it had these missing teeth that were intended in Jacques Grabert's plan. There were to be other institutions, and you know, so this really does help complete, to some degree, an earlier vision from the 1920s. The other thing is that I would say it gave us a chance to bring plants and create a kind of public environment, what we might call a civic public garden, that usually you can't do in American cities today because of maintenance or fear that somebody's going to steal the rhododendrons or whatever.
But we're talking about chestnut trees and water lilies and pools.
Yeah, no, a lot of the plants that are in the paintings that Todd and Billy were talking about, we have outside now, just to kind of remind you. And it's the whole thing. I would like to say it's about the memory, not nostalgia. You know, trying to remember what those issues are that you want to take forward that have some value.
Let me turn back to you, Todd Williams, and also to you, Billy Tsien, which is even talking about the materials that you use. And it seems that materials are so important to this building. The texture, where you got the limestone, for instance.
Well, certainly we wanted to be citizens of the Parkway and feel like we belonged in Philadelphia. This, after all, is the first building since 1929 that, as Laurie says, puts in another tooth back in the Grabert plan. And so you didn't want to appear to be as to not belong. So we thought of limestone, but we also thought that in a way it needed to be much more rich, looking at stone in a new way. And I think that Dr. Barnes had such a rich and complex idea of the possibilities of art, whether it was the inclusion of African art or whether it was the inclusion of hardware as part of his ensemble. Even Merion itself was made of two different kinds of French limestone. So we began to look further for something that felt lively, was limestone, certainly. And we found this marvelous stone, which is generically called Jerusalem stone, but actually comes south of Jerusalem in the Negev Desert. And we then visited the quarries where that's quarried. As I've said many times, we go to see if you want to your best vegetables, you better go to the farmer and talk to him about them. We did that. And then we talked to the quarriers and learned how we would quarry and how best to use the stone. And we decided to use a very, very wide range of this beautiful fossilized stone.
In fact, you see little tiny little fossils embedded in the stone.
Yeah, it's part of the story of the accretion of the stone and the lay down of Mother Earth and its transformation here to the Parkway. So it has an interest at a distance, and it has an interest when it's wet and when it's dry and when you're close to it. It brings the surface of the building not only as a monument, but it also brings it to life.
And I think one of the things that's really almost shocking to you, Billy Tien, which is when you finally get to the collection, walking through the building, well, of course, you see the great, you know, famous Matisse painting, but the light looks so different. And maybe the fact that there actually is light, it looks so different.
Well, one of the things that we were able to take advantage of is the advanced technology of glass. So all of the windows use this glass, which lets in less than 14% of the natural light. And in order to avoid glare, we have shades that come down that cut the glare if the sun is low. And then we also have shades that are blackout shades that come in, that come down at times when the museum is closed. And these are all actually computer controlled by actually a small model that sits up on top of the roof of the galleries themselves. So it's tracking the sunlight. So there are a lot of new technical advances that we're using to bring in the light. We're also daylighting the top gallery, so now there are clear stories, sort of a kind of vertical skylight, which happens on the top galleries. And what that does is it allows a mixture of natural light plus a very sophisticated artificial light to wash the building, wash the entire room. So we're not lighting a picture, we're really lighting a room. And in doing so, Derek Gilman, the director, has pointed out that the light that comes in that's natural light, it carries a kind of blue tone to it. And so all of those Cezanne paintings, which are so amazing, which had a kind of purpley color in the background, purpley blue, suddenly you can see it. And so people do feel when they come in and look at the paintings, they say, ah, but you've cleaned all the paintings. And
they haven't.
But they haven't. Interesting. Yeah. Well, let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation talking with Billy Tien and Todd Williams. They are the architects of the Barnes in Philadelphia, the new Barnes building in Philadelphia, partners and founders of Todd Williams and Billy Tien Architects, which is based in Manhattan. Also with us is Laurie Olin. He's a landscape architect, founder, partner of the Philadelphia-based landscape design firm called the Olin Studio. And the Barnes opens its doors on May 19th. Any questions or comments that you might have about some of the thinking that went into the new Barnes, give us a call, 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Lincoln, introducing the new 2013 Lincoln MKS with available 16-speaker THX surround sound and independent suspension. More at Lincoln.com. Lincoln, now it gets interesting.
Throughout the ages, mankind has communicated through the heartbeat of a drum and the spirit of a voice. May 10th through 13th, The Painted Bride presents Skins and Songs. Spoken Hand Percussion Orchestra meets Philip Hamilton's Voices. This live music presentation highlights the strength and beauty of humanity when cultural diversity prevails. Two ensembles, 22 artists, and over 33 traditions merge together as one on stage. For tickets and info, paintedbride.org. The Painted Bride supports WHYY.
Thanks to over 4,600 of our listeners who chose to become members during our recent spring membership campaign. Because of your interest in public media, WHYY continues to grow its market share, its revenue top lines, and positive net income. I'm WHYY CEO Bill Morazzo. You continue to inspire us to be the most trusted source of news and creative expression in the Delaware Valley. For this, I thank you.
Programming is supported by 21st Century Cyber Charter School, providing public online education for grades 6 through 12, utilizing the latest information and communication technology. More information at 21stcenturycyber.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking about the new Barnes or Barnes Philadelphia. And the doors open on May 19th, talking with the two architects, Todd Williams and Billy Tsien, and also the landscape designer, Lori Olin, and taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Lori, if I can turn back to you. Sure. as the landscape designer, also within this building we see trees sort of growing up inside. We actually get to look outside of windows to see the nature that's around. What is the thinking behind that?
Well, Todd and Billy said earlier that they not only thought that they'd like to do a building in a garden, but they thought maybe there should be a garden in the building. And so together, when we first started working on it, we tried to figure out how would we do that. And it was very clear that we had to have it open to the sky, and then it would be nice if the trees were in the ground. So that's how they ended up downstairs. So then we had to go find trees that were tall enough that would go all the way up to the second floor and would keep going and be happy in there, which we did. And so it's a wonderful, I don't know what you'd say, it's a real collaboration.
Yeah. Well, and you make it sound so matter of fact.
Well, it sort of was. And as they began working with the plans downstairs, it developed a little library. And then we said, well, wouldn't it be nice if maybe you could just step outside and be in the garden downstairs? So actually, when we were putting the trees in, I remember with the contractors, we no sooner had the trees in than two birds came and flew right into them. I thought, oh, my gosh, here they are. They're here already. But the notion that, as Todd was saying a minute ago about the light, being following it through the day, the idea that even when you're sort of buried inside a building, that actually that's outside. And there's the real light and the real day, and it rains and snows there. And
did you work with the Barnes Arboretum director? I mean, did you coordinate? Because
yes,
obviously the Barnes in Lower Merion, the landscape, all of that is so important to the experience.
Well, as you know, the Barnes has a school, which is more prominent for their teaching with children about paintings and fine art and craft. But they also have a garden and landscape school. And so with a lot of active alums. Mm-hmm. Some of whom have come through our office. And so one of the things we did was we consulted with Jacob, their arborist, and the man in charge of their arboretum, because they have a proper arboretum with a great collection of trees, Asian trees especially. So that's one of the things we did. And we thought about, for a while we even flirted with the idea of bringing some plants in from it, but then we said, why would we raid it when we could add to it? we will probably have some plants will rotate back and forth from their greenhouses for indoors in some of the indoor spaces here, but and on the terrace.
Let me turn back to you, Todd Williams, and having gone through the Barnes a couple of weeks ago with actually Radio Times producer Susan Greenbaum, I was trying to describe to people what we saw, and to be honest with you, I did not know how to describe it. So we are on the radio. How would you describe what this building looks like?
Well, I think we wanted to, as I said, to be a citizen of the Parkway, but we also wanted it to be have a kind of sleeper quality. That is, as you get to know it better, you begin to see how rich and interesting it is. The exterior of the building has really been developed thinking about African fabrics, actually. Barnes collected African fabrics, and Billy and I were thinking of kente cloth, which is a kind of patchwork quilt. So the beautiful Jerusalem or Negev stones are put together in a kind of patchwork, and they themselves are patched along as super panels on the outside, and that wraps itself actually inside the building as well. Mm-hmm. So what we wanted to do, working with Lori, is to make sure that there was a kind of a gentle delay as your shoulders increasingly dropped, as your life and feelings became more serene, and you essentially wound your way into the building. And then just before you enter the galleries, there's an extraordinary space that really has to be seen to be believed. It's really one of the great spaces I think I'll ever make. And
is that right?
I'm certain of that. And a magical space in Philadelphia, because it's really a space that's a kind of living room that's both inside and outside. And that's what you stand in, I think, in awe of. Just before you enter the galleries.
And I won't do justice to it, but there is light that comes in, from a long sort of beam,
strip of light. Sculpted light, yeah. Right. It's natural light coming from the north and from the south. that rattles around that beautiful space, 50 feet tall, and then fills it with the sort of character and quality of daylight.
And since you just said you think it's the best thing you've ever done, was it an aha moment, or was this sort of over time developing what you wanted that center space to be about?
I think it's both. It certainly didn't come immediately to us. We weren't at all sure of that, but we knew that we wanted, as you entered the galleries and as you're in the galleries, to feel that you were part of the outside. In Marion, when you're outside, before you entered the galleries, you were strictly in the Arboretum, but this really wasn't possible. There's no place, in a way, to take your coat off. There's no place to wait in inclement weather. So this really becomes an outdoor space, and we wanted it to be grand, and we wanted it to be memorable to the city of Philadelphia, to all a visit, and I think it is.
Let me turn to you, Billy Tien, because in entering it, we walk through what Laurie Olin and his people have designed. We get into the building, but it takes us a while to get to the actual gallery. Mm-hmm. And I guess, is that part of sort of raising expectations, curiosity, sort of a more sort of dramatic experience?
I think in a certain way, it's almost the opposite. I think that what we were all trying to do, what Laurie is doing with the series of gardens, and what we do with the series of spaces, the whole sequence is about serenity and about becoming quieter,
calmer.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you walk through now, before you get the last garden, before you enter the building, and all you can hear are birds. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. And so that light court that Todd is talking about, I think, is an incredibly calm space, because we want people to be prepared for the intensity of the collection. So I think it's both magnificent, but it's extremely peaceful, and that prepares you for walking in and seeing the paintings that you're going to be seeing.
And how much of the question, what would Dr. Barnes want? I mean, how much of that went into some of the thinking?
I've said he is like the phantom client, sort of always, and from reading about him, I would say growling right. into your ear. And so I think that we were always thinking about his intentions, and we tried to both honor them and then take it to another place.
Yeah, well, he was pretty radical, you know. I mean, when you think about it, here he brought this avant-garde French architect, and then gets Lipschitz to do these kind of quasi-African reliefs. I mean, what an interesting, strange man.
Yeah,
indeed. And look what he created.
Yeah, so I think Billy is right that, you know, part of it is to try and slow people down on the one hand and build, you're right, Marty, there's a little bit of building expectations, but the point is that Todd and Billy wanted them, they had to come in from the north because that's the way the building is oriented, you know, it has to be from the north. And so how do you do that, you know, when you're on the parkway? Everyone would say, well, why don't you have the door on the other side? We say, well, because the door isn't on the other side. The door is on the north. And yet, you know, they had this issue that how do they light the paintings, because a lot of them are done from north light, and here is this building faced south. I mean, there's a lot of riddles in this building, don't you think?
Yeah. I think, you know, it's certainly not a museum. It's a foundation, and it's an educational foundation. Yeah. It's on the parkway, and we've got the great PMA at the other end of the parkway, and you think of the great museums today, and they're great public spaces, but they're filled with people, and they're filled with activity, and it's a kind of, we wanted to make sure that this was both part of that legacy, but also in honoring Dr. Barnes, was really a place apart.
Right. Well, it's at a residential scale, too. Yeah. It's a grand residence, but it's residential, not civic, in its original conformation, no?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the idea that it's not a museum, I mean, it's what this is, what this is called is important because of this legacy and of certainly its history in Lower Marion. You're saying it's not a museum.
No, and it's really, he did it to educate our eyes, educate our minds, and educate all people. And so that's why it absolutely belongs in Philadelphia and belongs, and it's going to be a great anchor for Philadelphia. But you have to see you're going there actually to use your instincts and to look for shape, line, and color, and to slowly become informed as to how these artists thought, and then how we all think as we, you know, assemble our daily lives.
I'm curious, with a building, this one or others that you've designed, and I'm looking at you, Billy, which is, you design it with something in mind, and then you see how people use it. Do you like to come back and just be anonymous and watch how people move through a building that you have designed and built?
Oh, that is totally the best.
Is it?
So we, over the past few weeks, obviously, we've been there more and more. And last week, on the sort of one sunny day, people were just walking through the gardens. They were walking through the gardens, and they had their kids, and they had their dogs, and it was amazing. It was really wonderful. Everyone was smiling. So I think the use of people in the end is what makes a place successful.
How people use it, how they relate to it, do they come back to it,
right.
All of that. Let me just quickly reintroduce everybody. I'd like to get some callers in on the conversation. We're talking about the new Barnes, the Barnes Philadelphia, the Barnes Foundation unveiling its new Philadelphia home on May 19th. We're talking with the two architects, Todd Williams and Billy Tsien, founders, partners of Todd Williams and Billy Tsien Architects based in Manhattan. Also with us, Lori Olin. He's a landscape architect here in Philadelphia, founder and partner of the Philadelphia landscape design firm called the Olin Studio. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Let me get Jesse from King of Prussia to join us. And Jesse, go ahead. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a question to your guest and a comment. I think that Dr. Barnes was linked very closely to the progressive movement of the teens and 20s in America, along with a lot of other people. And he wanted to bring the art to the people, but he wanted to bring people to art. And I'm wondering whether your guest could elucidate how that will be done.
Fair enough. And I guess the idea is limiting to some degree, or at least controlling the amount of people that are let into the building. Do you want to take that, Todd?
Yes. Well, we will continue to have to limit the number of people who come into the galleries that Dr. Barnes had assembled. There's no question, and they cannot be overwhelmed by people. The great thing is, in the new building, is that they will be open many more hours. They will still need to rest. There will still be times that there are classes there. But we will strictly control the movement of people. I believe it's 125 people per hour, no more than 250 people in the 23 rooms of the collection. So that'll be terribly important. I think the way that we bring people to the Barnes is by presenting it in Philadelphia, right next to the Free Library, between the Free Library and the Rodin Museum. I think that we'll have it, that this building, this collection, will stimulate both of those fantastic cultural treasures.
Anyone want to add to that?
Well, I was going to say that there more people can be at the foundation in various places, in temporary galleries and in the great central space and out on the terraces and everything. So there'll be more chance to come and be there and sit with a catalog out on a terrace or something, and while you wait your turn or something. So, but I think in order to keep the quality. I mean, clearly more people will see it, more people will come, they will have a greater attendance by far, but still, in order to keep the quality of the experience the highest, they'll have to keep a lid on it. But we've all learned to take our turn and get in lines for timed events.
Take your turn, yes. And you have to be patient for nature as well, for nature to grow and fill in some of these spaces. Yeah. Let me get, it looks like Jerry from Hatboro. Jerry, thanks for calling into Radio Times. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Part of the problem with the old Barnes is that only a percentage of the artwork could be on display. What percentage will be on display in the new facility, and what's the price of admission?
I don't know if we know the answer to that last question, but in terms of display, can you take that, Billy?
Well, some of the artwork that was in his house is now mostly going to stay in his house. They're still trying to decide about it. There's one painting of Dr. Barnes that will come to the
portrait.
The portrait of Dr. Barnes will come to the new show that will be in the Changing Exhibits Gallery. But every piece of art that was in Marion, that was on the walls there, every piece of hardware and every object will be shown in the new building.
Right. And in fact, there was nothing in storage. So, the only art that existed that was there was, I think, 135 paintings. As Billy said, some of these will be in the changing exhibits show that's going to talk about the history of Dr. Barnes, and some of these will come forward. But by and large, of the 2,400 objects, I'm saying every single one of those was on display and now will be beautifully on display. Mm-hmm. Relative to the cost, I believe that you can look online and you can get tickets. There are some free days. I believe that a ticket for the is a $17 ticket. You can come and enjoy the changing exhibits collection or the building itself for $11. So I think there are a whole variety of opportunities for people who want to come and pay nothing. Those who would like to see the collection and is coming in with the timed entry.
And the gardens are free.
All of them except the one that you would have to get to by going through the light court. Right.
But everything else around
everything
there
else is public also? And open, yeah.
Yeah.
How do you, I'm looking at you, Todd Williams, how do you then see the relationship between this new building and the Barnes Foundation that's in Lower Marion? I mean, do you see them as cousins, as brother and sister, siblings,
well,
husband and wife?
I don't know how to put that.
Mother, child.
Certainly, they're part of the same family,
right.
And this is the new flagship, I would say. But we know that Marion is going to remain the place for horticultural study. Mm-hmm. Marion will also be a place for the archives, which are ever growing, and I think it'll be increasingly beautiful grounds there. The mm-hmm. building itself will be saved and preserved, and exactly how it's to be used, we don't know. But mm-hmm. you know, there are three elements of the Barnes Foundation, which includes a place called Cofial, which is about an hour and a half outside of the city, and which needs to be visited. It has a great redware collection. So these are all, you know, I would say, part of the family.
Mm.
Some of the other materials that you use, including some wood from the Coney Island boardwalks. It's, reclaimed wood.
Right. Well, we wanted always to sort of move between the sense of a sort of civic building and a home. And so in this great light court, instead of having a stone floor, we've used a wooden floor. And the wood is actually reclaimed wood. It's not the wood that was
the
surface of the boardwalk. It's actually the wood that supported the surface. But it is an ipe wood. And when you visit, and I hope you all will visit, you'll see that the floor wood itself is quite varied in tone. So throughout the building, just as we wanted to use many variations of the stone, we accepted and used the many variations of the wood because we think it gives a liveliness and a kind of informality to probably what is for many people quite formal space.
Well, let's take another short break. We'll get back to our conversation talking with Billy Tsien and Todd Williams. They are the architects of the new Barnes building here in Philadelphia. Also with us, Laurie Olin and his company, the Olin Studio, designed the landscape around the new building. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. Call us. We'll be right back.
WHYY is proudly supported by the new University Medical Center of Princeton at Plainsboro. Opening May 22nd, the new hospital is being built with all single-patient rooms and has been designed with innovations that may help improve healing and lower infections. Features include a new rapid-response emergency room and CHOP docs to care for children. The new University Medical Center of Princeton at Plainsboro, redefining care. Opening May 22nd. More at PrincetonHCS.org.
Hey everybody, Jad here. I wanted to let you know that Radiolab is coming soon to Philadelphia for a live show. We're calling it In the Dark, and it's all about darkness and light, seeing, believing. It's going to be a super fun night because we've got the comedian Dimitri Martin coming with us, the singer-songwriter Tao Nguyen, and the amazing dance troupe Palabolas. They'll all be there. We'll be there June 29th at the Academy of Music. You can get tickets at radiolab.org.
The Garden State Wine Growers Association supports WHYY and presents their annual Mother's Day Wine Trail May 12th and 13th. Wineries will host a variety of events designed to treat mom to a memorable day within the confines of New Jersey's vineyards. The Wine Trail will feature cooking demonstrations, dessert pairings, music, entertainment, and complimentary samplings. To plan a wine trail visit, NewJerseyWines.com.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowain. We're talking about the new Barnes Foundation and talking with the architects of this building and also talking with the landscape designer, Todd Williams, Billy Tsien, and Lori Olin, our guests. And we have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. Billy, if I can turn back to you, it seems like materials and textures are so, and even the use of lighting seems so important to the kind of thinking that went into this building. Is that your sort of philosophy for architecture?
Well, I think in general we're very interested in materials that express themselves. So we like to use stone that has a lot of variation in it. And even we like to see the hand of people who make things. So the stone that we used at the Barnes Foundation has quite a few sections which are hand-chiseled. Because when we went to the quarry, we saw men sitting there working and using these chisels, cutting the stone. So the connection of material to human being, both in the sense of a person who visits and touches it, but also in the sense of the person who actually works it, is very important to us in all the work that we do.
Do you want to add to that? And it's been referred to as modernism. I don't know if you're comfortable with that or if that describes how you approach a building or think about a building.
Well, modernism is such a general term, and of course it describes the moment, but I think in our case, and the way we want to think about it, architecture, it's all connected to history, and it's connected to the future. So in a way, this, and it's always been made by people. I'm sorry. And it's
fair enough.
And they've given their heart and souls to it. And we, in this building, have so many incredible craftspeople that have worked on it. But even at the level of the contractor, the plumber, the stonemason, the person who's plasterer, in every single case, I think we've honored their contribution, and I think it comes alive. And frankly, architecture should do this. This is, in my opinion, what we all should be doing in making a contemporary architecture, a modern architecture.
It sounds like you're very proud of this building. Oh, are you?
Immensely. Yeah.
Immensely.
Yeah.
Are you as well, Billy Tsien?
More than immensely. Very, very proud. Yeah.
Yeah. And I know you've worked on a lot of other buildings as well. Was there something about the challenge, even of trying to create this foundation to hold this, you know, unbelievable collection of art and artifacts?
Well, I think in our work we always think about the longevity of our buildings, and we think we want to make a 100-year building. This is a building that's hundreds of years.
Mm. I was going to say,
this is L'Oreal.
As a friend of theirs, I can say something they can't say about it.
Ahead.
And that is, I think this is probably one of the best buildings built in this city for 50, 60 years.
What makes you say that?
It's very beautiful, and B, it's extremely rich and well-made, and the details, the sense of it's how it's put together, the thought behind it. It's good old-fashioned modernism on the one hand. On the other hand, it's a very now building, but it's timeless.
Yeah.
And you have to go back to PSFS or some of that work to find work at this level, I think.
And for you, as someone who basically did the landscape design,
it was a challenge to keep up, you know.
Well, I was wondering about that.
But the other thing is, we were all playing in an arena that is very important, and you know that everyone's watching, and so you bring your game.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of other things I think that Todd and Billy didn't mention. For instance, the part of the relationship between inside and outside is that there's water. And, you know, water is the blood of the earth. And it's hard to think of a great space that doesn't have water.
Oh.
You know? And so we start with water on the parkway, and then we find it as we walk along by the trees on the way to the door. And then when you get in the light court, there's some more. You know, it just moves along with you. You know, it's a there are ideas like that that our firms, you know, together when we're working, we thought about.
Well, and then there's always the problem of parking, right? I mean, the challenge of creating a parking lot or a parking space or figuring out where people are going to park, how they're going to be delivered or dropped at the door.
Yeah. Well, we honestly, we don't really know how many people will come by what means of transport. Most of them will be by car. And there's also a bus network here. There's not the great subway network, I'm afraid, we've got in New York, public transportation. So as we thought about this building in Fairmont Park, we wanted to make sure that we at least didn't remove cars from the neighborhood, because the neighborhood had parked around this site. At the same time, we were also aware that parking had been a problem in Marion. So, honestly, we have a gorgeous parking lot, and I would say it's a beautiful room for cars. In the long run, I've believed that should be a garden.
And the parking lot should be a garden.
Yeah, sure. Well, absolutely, it should, and it can be a garden.
It's full of trees and vines, and, you know, who knows, cars may not be here forever. But the thing is...
Ever the optimist.
Yeah, no, but, you know, it's a complex program that we had to fit on a very small site, and... you know, parking is the bane of all of us in our careers. It's the one thing that comes up in all community meetings. It gets everybody excited, and they forget to focus on, you know, the why they're going there and all the merits of something.
Yeah. Well, let me get some more callers in. We have, looks like Don from Westchester joining us on Radio Times. Don, go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you, Marty.
You're welcome.
I know that temperature and humidity control are very important in the preservation of paintings and other artwork, but you, from the sounds of things, you also have plants coexisting inside your space.
No, that's not true. They're outdoors. They're not actually in the building, sir.
Oh, I thought you said you had trees growing through the building.
Yeah, they do. They grow up through the building in an atrium space that's outside in glass, you know.
Okay, so the two spaces are isolated as far as temperature.
Oh, yeah. We would never put them in the same room. Yeah.
Well, okay. I have to admit, I wanted them in the same room.
But you lost that one.
But I lost that battle.
Your point is well taken, sir, and we were very conscious of that, and so we didn't quite do it. It's an illusion.
but even picking up on his comment, I'll put this to you, Billy. You talked about the importance of light, but we're obviously, it's important to preserve this incredible collection of paintings and artwork and artifacts. And I'm assuming you have to keep everything very, very controlled.
Oh, we have one of the, I think, the most sophisticated temperature and humidity control systems possibly existing. And one of the things I think that is also important is that we've worked very hard to sort of try to hide all the ways that the atmosphere is being corrected. So it's quite silent, and you won't see the apertures that used to exist in the old building where there are big heating grills that you saw that were always in the way. Those disappear, but the care of the work is huge.
Nice. I noticed no fire extinguishers on the wall.
That's true. Well, we certainly tried to make sure that the building was safe for all people and safe for the art. But as Billy says, we have a lot of redundancies here. I should say what's remarkable about the building is all of the incredible and sophisticated controls. We are going to deliver a LEED Platinum building, which is the, as far as we know, the first art museum built from ground up that is a LEED Platinum building. It's a very, very difficult thing to do because of the, as Don mentions, the issues and controls that are required to make sure that the paintings are stable and stable over hundreds and hundreds of years.
And you have solar panels on one of the rooftops.
Yeah,
yes?
We have solar panels over that beautiful glass light box that we've got. The entire surface is providing somewhere close to 10% of the power for the building, electrical power.
Yeah, but then the big L-shaped part with the new... offices and facilities, that part has a green roof over it, and then there's, as Billy said, there are these skylights over the other, the Marion Bar. So there are these three different roofs, each one doing a different job environmentally.
And Laurie, you mentioned all the water, the pot, the water is recycled?
Oh, you bet. Yeah, of course it is. And we are catching all the water that's going from, you know, the parking lot and filtering it, and all the water we're catching, we're putting in a cistern, we're reusing for irrigation.
Let me get, looks like Philip from Downingtown to join us on Radio Times. And Philip, go ahead, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you very much.
You're
I have
welcome.
Two comments, please.
Sure, go ahead.
My first one, I think it's very disingenuous of your the designer to use the old worn-out statement that Dr. Barnes wanted the people to see his great art collection. He did, and that's precisely why he built that fabulous building in Marion. My other comment is, and I was pleased to see in yesterday's column by Edward Szafranski, and I felt this also. My question is, why isn't there, for example, a bronze statue of Albert Barnes at the entrance so that people coming in will know where this great collection came from and not just his name over the door?
Fair enough. Can I toss that to you, Tom?
Well, I don't feel that it was disingenuous on our part. I certainly feel that we're bringing the art to Philadelphia. Many more people will see it, and people of more stripes and colors, I'm afraid. Mm-hmm. Let's be real about that. And Dr. Barnes happened to have been interested in all people. So I'm absolutely convinced and know that it's really going to be brought to the people.
More accessible.
As for the bust of Dr. Barnes, actually, as Billy mentioned earlier, there's a terrific de Chirico painting of Dr. Barnes that was in the house and that will be, after the changing exhibits, will, I believe, be right there at the front door. So I think maybe not a bronze bust, but a gorgeous painting, of, mm-hmm. an astonishing painting of Dr. Barnes will be there.
Well, we have just a couple more minutes before we have to say goodbye, but I'm curious to you, Laurie Olin, what's on your to-do list for the week?
Well, we have many more plants that are still not there. We have to balance one of the fountains. There, you know, it's a fine tuning. There's vines that have to go in. Things have to be moved. We discovered a gap looking out from the main gallery. There's this panoply of green plants so that it's lush and you feel that you're not just on a traffic way. But looking out the other day, Todd says, whoops, there's a gap over there. So we have to move one of the large shrubs over, but we have to make sure we don't create a new gap. So we're going around fine-tuning a lot of things. Yeah.
Is there anything keeping you up at night?
Well, I don't want to talk about the things that might go wrong.
Just
what if it leaks, you know?
All that stuff.
You know, you love your contractors. They work like dogs, and they try so hard. They do everything. And then, you know, things always surprise us. And then we have to go back and make it better, you know. So it won't be open it'll be open soon, and then it won't be finished for a while because landscapes, you know, they take a while.
Yes, they do.
They take many years to really fill in. This one should probably look about the way I want it to in about 5-6 years.
Oh, sorry.
You know, and then in 10 or 20, it'll be really nice. You know? Okay.
What's on your to-do list, Billy Tien? And you're looking at Todd Williams.
I'm just thinking my to-do list is to enjoy the building.
Wow.
Yeah.
And by that meaning walking through it, appreciating what you have accomplished.
And
to be
seeing
able to
like
sit
that.
In it, yeah.
Yeah, and seeing other people come in. Having them enjoy the building and enjoy the collection.
Right. I mean, do you feel like, I guess you're never done with a building, right?
No, they're like your children.
So they need for care and nurturing some guidance through their life.
And like your children, they're always your children.
Right. That's true.
How about for you, Tom?
Well, I think as Billy, we've been living this, and it's been our day and night for 5 years, and I think it's time to share it. And I really am excited to share it. I'm also nervous about it. I'm certain that it will almost universally be loved. Will it be loved too much? Will there be people who will not like it? I'm certain there will be.
Sure.
There must be. This is a building for all people, and they need to be able to all respond to it in their own terms and their own ways. And we're, you know, on tenterhooks. We want it to be perfect for everyone, but we know it can't do that. I think it'll be just a fantastic gift to the city of Philadelphia and to really to preserving the legacy of Dr. Barnes.
And what does it mean to love a building too much?
Well, I, you know, if it's overcrowded, I mean, certainly that's one of the problems. That I would say the Museum of Modern Art's lobby is loved too much. I think so much so that you can't feel comfortable in that space. And I think that if we put too many people in the gallery, that would be loved too much. So we need to make sure we balance the needs for the collection and the needs for the city of Philadelphia with the desires and demands of a public. This is not just a local public. I'm sorry. This is a world building, and people all over the world be interested in it.
I'm curious about even just the first time you sat down 5 years ago, what that conversation was, Billy Tien. Do you even remember?
I'm just thinking when we first found out that we won the commission, it was one of those sort of wow, and then what now?
what have we done?
Right.
Really?
Yeah.
And then you get to work, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
when you get to work, it all is good because we all want to work. We all want to give our best effort. And in this case, we were surrounded by people who all had the same desires.
Yeah.
So it's been a fantastic experience working with Lori, working with the Barnes Foundation, with trying to satisfy all of the people that we know we can never satisfy.
It's been a wonderful client. Yeah. It's a great project to have been involved in. Yeah.
And Lori, I was reading about you that you're also designing the I think more than 100 acres for the new Apple headquarters in Silicon Valley?
We have a non-disclosure agreement where I can't talk about it.
Well,
but
that sounds very Apple-esque.
however, you're going to go on the Cupertino City website and see the drawings that were filed for the EIR, which is kind of goofy. But yeah, we are.
You have to learn to deal with secrecy, I guess, if you're dealing with Apple, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's been a great pleasure. Thank you, all three of you, for joining us today on Radio Times. And our guests have been Todd Williams and Billy Tien. They are the architects who have designed the new Barnes Foundation. Also has joining us has been Lori Olin, and he is the landscape design firm that created the landscape for the new Barnes, the Olin Studio. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out much more about this program. Also, WHYY has set up a preview for the Barnes Collection, a documentary we're working on here at WHYY. You can check it out at whyy.org/Barnes. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times. Radio Times is produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty McMahon, Dennis Devine, and Debbie Builder. I'm Marty Moscoyne. Thank you so much for joining us.